Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 10K Collective, the place to be for six, seven and eight figure Amazon sellers. Today we are talking to Nadine Eich of Inidar, which is an agency that specializes in customer service in German, as well as handling English language customer service. And we're going to have a bit of a different episode. So instead of just talking about Amazon all day, we're going to talk about the ups and downs, the highs and lows of running an agency. So Nadine, what made you first start running an agency in the first place?
Whoa, okay. Well, hi again.
Hello again.
When was it? I think it was 2016. I started at an agency myself. It was a pretty large agency for virtual assistants, and I got sort of sucked into it, and I realized how it all worked because there were team leaders that had like five people on their team, then there was the boss, you know, and things like that. And when I got down this whole system of how this works, I decided, okay, I'm just going to step out of my comfort zone right now, be, you know, assistant myself and see how it is without the entire agency kind of setup. And then that was when I ran into Amazon seller from Germany. And he searched for a customer support, well, assistant, and I told him that I could do it. And we worked together for I think about 9 months or so, until I asked him if he thinks that, you know, we could do this on a bigger scale, like if I could do this on a bigger scale. He said, yeah, I mean, why not, you go and try it. And that's how I got one of my other like sort of friendly assistants that was like sort of friends with from this other agency on board, and we started this thing out together. Next week she's actually there for 3 years now at my agency, which is really cool. And she brought on her best friend, and then we were three, and that's how it kind of evolved from there. Now we're 13, we've been 15 along, you know, during these 3 years, and it always goes up and down a little bit. That's how it happened.
Excellent. So it's nice to hear how it actually works in real life. So a couple of things. I mean, you started off with something that you did, you were employed by somebody else and you learned the skill set and saw how the structure worked, which is really, really helpful. I think starting something completely from scratch without a template is a bit harder. I mean, people do it. But the second thing is a decision that I'm saying. You just thought you were just brave, and at about that point you found the person. But I think sometimes the decision and then the opportunities come together, don't they? Once you start looking for the right thing, you start to find the people that will help you do that. Yeah, interesting that your friend from the agency and the third person, what, that became sort of effectively business partners, or were they sort of employee number one and employee number two?
Employee number one.
Yeah, okay.
And number two. And what's also very important to note here is that I found something that can be standardized, you know? So employee number one, who's been with me for 3 years now, she started like helping me with like a system that we put down. We have a little Wikipedia of our own. And I gave her all the information that I'd learned over 9 months. And I said, okay, we can standardize this because we're only going to work in the Amazon Seller Central. This is how you answer to emails. This is how you set up templates. This is how you, you know, send out replacements or make refunds. And she's a teacher. So she, you know, put it all down. And so we had this blueprint. And whenever someone new came on, it took a while. It really did take a while. We just gave them this blueprint and she taught them how I taught her. And this way I could focus on getting new clients and she could focus on teaching these girls how to work with the client. Yeah. that's how it worked.
Nice. Yeah, so that's really, really good. So you actually brought somebody on to focus on new employees, because obviously the quality of the people is critical when you're doing customer service. That's kind of, I guess it's true with anything where you're selling a service, basically, aren't you? Pure and simple. There's no product involved at all, but and there's no automation or software. I mean, you understand the systems you're working in, but you're not offering it. So yeah, it makes sense that you've got to get great people and get training. But interesting that you separated that out quickly at the beginning, because that makes a lot of sense to me. And I've struggled really with the podcast, with doing both the production of everything in a lot of ways. And it's actually when you're getting staff on board and managing them, which I've been doing recently, that takes a lot of time and energy. And it does distract you from being more customer facing, where I could be, you know, emailing clients to explore if they would come and join the 10K Collective or Million Pound Mastermind in London, for example, instead of which I'm trying to get a VA to tell me whether he's getting married next week, which it turns out is, as we mentioned. So yeah, that makes a great deal of sense, actually, to separate those out.
I think it's sort of funny, because my parents always told me I was very good at just telling people what to do. And that's sort of the first thing I did. I didn't even, like, I worked on setting up Anita, I think, from May 2016 until September, October, just to set it up. And she helped me with it. And I sort of just gave her instructions of what to do. And my mother hated that. Like, she hated that I was paying someone to do something I should be doing, that I could be doing. And I was just like, no, it's fine. You know, she'll do this. So I have more headspace for other things. And she just went on and on. And even to this day, she's like, you should do this yourself. You know, there's no point. And I'm like, Mom, okay, look, I'm not very good at these things. I'm good at setting them up and then just see them go through, you know, and then I do something new, or I, you know, focus on other problems, higher problems in our customer service, template changes, these kind of things. And I think it's very important early on to, if you have someone who you trust and you know that there's someone's better than you at something, just to let go, as if you have like the money for it, right? I mean, you gotta have the money to pay them. But I just want to get this as good as possible, you know, before I had new clients.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think it's, you're focusing on the business, working on the business, not in it, but also you're the client facing person, and she's the sort of service and implement the operation. I guess you're sort of chief marketing / sales person, where she's the chief operating officer, or whatever you would call it, in using such grand terms for smallish businesses. But yeah, I think it's, what you did is very interesting to me, because you very, very early on took on somebody who was able to take the operations more off your plate. And I guess that's one of the reasons why you're able to expand the agency quite quickly, which makes sense to me. I think that takes a lot of discipline to do that. As you said, you know, I can imagine your mum, you know, telling you off. I mean, I think it would probably be my wife in my case, like, why are you paying somebody to do something you could do? Is a fair question.
But
we've got to get over that if we're going to actually expand something. Otherwise, you're just going to say you and two people, right? And juggling all the time. You've obviously got some great people coming on board in terms of staff. So how do you find the staff, and how do you manage the staff, or how does your employee number one do that stuff?
The staff kind of process is still mine. I always pick them myself, and then she can, you know, teach them. But how it went on in the very beginning was I sent out like a Google form where I asked them certain questions. For example, how would you reply to this German email? How would you reply to this English email of a customer, right? There, I think there's, at the very beginning, I had a girl, like, I copy and pasted it from a customer email that said, you know, I hate this, this is terrible. And it was a really bad email. And I wanted to see how they would react to it and how they would work with it. And then I also asked them about the level of their language skills. It was mainly to see if they could, I don't know how to explain this, but if I tell you, you know, I'm super, super good at English, and then your English is mediocre, you know, then I can see that your expectations do not level with the reality. And these kind of things that I put into this Google form and just ask them about how many clients they have, how much experience they have with X, Y, and Z. And then I also ask them if they ever worked with an Amazon seller, if they are an Amazon seller themselves. If they are an Amazon seller themselves, that's like the out right there. You can't be an Amazon seller and work for me. That's not happening. Because my clients trust us that we won't bring someone in who could potentially learn more for their own business. So we don't do that. But so this is what happened at the first time I set this up, and I got like 25 or something applications. I picked two. And then we were four together. Then I employed a virtual assistant for myself. She's still on board, and she basically takes care of all of our client communication after I spoke to them and we decided to do this, like do this contract together, to work together. So that allowed me to have the main two issues in my business being, you know, taken care of. Employee number one, she was teaching the girls that I chose to work for us, and she gave them like the blueprint and talked to them about issues and stuff. And then my other assistant, she's still, you know, talking to the clients and making sure that the contracts are signed, that the money is coming in, and I could focus on getting new clients.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've got a very clear role, which is you're the chief, apart from the CEO, if you like, the chief marketing officer and chief salesperson, whereas the other people are dealing with, once the clients are onboarded, the client communication, so your own internal customer service, and then you've got somebody else training the staff, and then but you also deal with the HR function of hiring, but not managing. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I think a lot of us, myself included, a lot of entrepreneurs generally aren't very good at the sort of day-to-day grind, the week-to-week, month-to-month grind of managing people well, which is a lot of routine and a lot of little details that you need to not jump on somebody's head for not doing things, but also not just let it slide. I find that hard. Maybe I'm just a grumpy person. I don't know. But, you know, just like you just let somebody do whatever they do for 2 weeks and then suddenly turn around and go, why isn't this good? And why aren't you doing this? And I try not to do that because I know it's terrible management. But I think sometimes entrepreneurs get bored quite quickly and they assume that stuff is done because they work at 10,000 miles an hour. They kind of assume everyone else does. So I don't know if you've had that issue.
Well, I must say I've been pretty lucky with my girls, so I can't really complain about that. Whenever, you know, employee number one, I
mean, what is her name? We're gonna have to give her a name because it sounds a bit ridiculous.
Her name is Olga, and my assistant's name is Micha. Yeah, so Olga, when she went, like, I talked to this girl, you know, like the application, I said, okay, this is working. Then she went over the blueprint, and then if she told me this isn't working, you know, like she's not, like, she's asking questions that are, you should not be asking, you know, then I was like, okay, then we have to rethink this decision again. And this is how we sort of went through the process. We did have some employees that worked for us for a few months, and then they just messed up pretty badly, so we had them let them go. But every time she's told me, I don't think this is going to happen. You know, I don't think this is going to work. And because she's working very closely with them, teaching them these things. So I think it's also a process of learning how to pick your people. Right now, like at the stage that we are at, I do not have to ask anyone to work for us anymore because they're all like flooding in. Like we get a lot of applications just because we're known. And my girls always say, okay, yeah, this is my friend. My friend, you know, she needs something or he needs work. And I always say, you gotta apply. You know, you can't get into us because you know her, you know, or you know me. Even my friends, you know, if I'm aware that their English is not the way that's supposed to be for my business, you know, this is not going to happen. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's important to have standards and everybody adheres to them. I think, I mean, I do the same with the masterminds that I run or anything else, really. I mean, I just, you know, everyone, even if I've had a conversation with them and I know they're a really cool, great person, I can say to them, look, you're in as far as I'm concerned, right? But I still want you to fill the application form so that I am informed about you and your business and have an interview, not because you're not a great person, I'm not going to let you in, but because that's part of the process of me learning who's in the group and how to work with them. And it's fun. It's kind of a quasi kind of employee type situation in the sense that with a mastermind, you've got to nurture. It's like a garden. You can't just kind of sell people a course or work one-to-one where the quality comes down to me personally. It comes down, it's that funny halfway house. The quality of the other people in the mastermind determines the quality of the mastermind. So it's not quite the same as employees, but actually that shows that I'm naturally a client-facing person, not as a staff manager, because I don't apply the same rigor to my staff hiring as you obviously do. So tell me a bit more about the management side of things with the staff. What are your sort of communication rhythms and tools internally? How do you stay in touch with each other? And is it a virtual team? That's one question I should have asked, but first.
Yes. So it's all virtual. A lot of my girls are in Thailand, Australia, Portugal, America. They're everywhere, but they're all German, like, natives, you know. So they travel a lot. I guess they're digital nomads. That's what they are. And we only communicate through Skype and Active Collab. And Active Collab is a project management system that we've been using from the very beginning, where they can just see which tasks are still open, what they have to do, and just tick them off. And it's very easy for us to do our accounting as well. I'm in love with this tool. I really love it. And Skype is just easy because it's free. You know, I like Slack a lot. But Slack, I mean, I'm not going to pay $5 or $6 every month for each of my people. It's insane, you know, so I'm not going to do that. And we meet once a year usually, so in Berlin. So we say, okay, we are here on this weekend. Anybody who wants to come over there, you know, you can just come and we have dinner together, do something. Like, we did a canoe kind of trip and then we went to an Indian restaurant. It's all taken care of, you know, the firm is paying for it basically. And if someone wants to come, that's awesome. You know, we can get to know each other. But if you don't want to come, that's also okay because you're, I don't know, in Thailand or wherever you are. And so we just call sometimes.
Nice. So I was going to say, do you have a sort of informal way of getting in touch apart from Slack and Active Collab to sort of just stay in touch with each other? Do you just have like a weekly call, or is it just like as and when, sort of ad hoc?
It is, you know, at the very beginning, I talk to them quite a lot. But the longer that we work together, the more it's kind of phasing out. And I still have to get back on this. So I think next week I'm just going to talk to everybody and be like, okay, can we call in? Can we call in? Just to have like a checkup, because these things, they do get out of focus, because, you know, when you have a problem, you usually reach out. Also, whenever I see and we have like a chat with our team leaders and the person and myself, like the Inida, you know, that's the virtual assistant's name, Inida. Then I see if there's a problem with a client or something like that. I always reach out personally and say, look, if he's getting on your nerves or she's getting on your nerves, you're more important, okay? Like, you let me know and I will fix this. Like, I promise you, you always come first. And this has, you know, this is always how it's been, because I want good energy in my company and I don't want anyone, like any of my girls that I spent so much time training, so much time and blood, tears, that they just go because a client is difficult, very difficult. And it takes a lot to make me get to that point. But it's happened before, and my girls are more important in that moment.
That's a good attitude. And that's actually quite a sort of, I think probably, if I may say so, quite a European attitude. And I hope I don't annoy Americans with this. I mean, I think that the labor laws and the sort of association and the way that things work in Germany is so opposite to most of the states of America, although I know it varies a great deal. But I think it's almost impossible to fire somebody in Germany. And I'm not saying that that's a reason why you would keep something on, but there is more of a culture of hiring for keeps. And I think actually staff turnover is a big problem in the virtual world. And actually working very, very hard to avoid that is hugely important in terms of the quality of service that you can offer, because you've got somebody with 3 years, very precise, narrow, specialized experience. They're going to be very, very experienced at everything that comes up.
Exactly.
So they're just going to give better service. And also, it's just so much hassle finding and hiring people that for you internally, it makes sense as well. But it just takes a lot of courage, doesn't it? To, when the client's the one producing the money for your business and your staff is the one creating a cost, of course, by definition, that it takes some courage to actually say to somebody, you know what, this client's being, you know, not very nice, and I'm going to stick on your side, because that's potentially losing money, right?
Yes, but you always have to be aware of the fact that there's nothing more expensive than losing staff, in my opinion, you know, because if she goes, she, you know, I have three other clients that I have to reassemble, like two other people, and then I have to get my girls on board for applications again, sifting through them, talking to them, training them, then the entire onboarding process, you know, you have to find a new client to take them on. They might make mistakes, they might not be a good fit, and you'll have to let them go. So yeah, it's we're very, very protective, let's say that, because our girls, they usually don't know, sometimes they don't know if something is not good for them. For example, we had one client who had so much, like a lot of work that wasn't really paid for, because we have a system set up. We are not paid by the hour. We're paid by an action. An action being sending an email, sending out a replacement, sending a refund. These are actions. And we are very specialized when it comes to that. So we only do Amazon customer service. If you want to do virtual assistant jobs, you know, that are also related to Amazon, be my guest, that's okay. But it's something else. If this is like online shop emails from not Amazon, but Shopify, whatever, we have to make sure that the relation between the payment and the work, the time that you spend doing these tasks, you know, correlates. And she was doing things that took ages, and she wasn't really getting paid enough for it. And so one of my team leaders, she stepped in during her holiday because we had a feeling that this is not going well. And then we realized that she was like working for €7 an hour. And that's not like, no, we can't do this. So we confronted the customer and said, okay, we have to change this up. He didn't want to change it up, like the pricing model. So we had to let him go. She didn't say anything, but I knew in the long run, she would have been like, well, I'm not really getting paid anything, you know, so I want to go. Very, you know, very protective.
Yeah, I like that. You have a great deal of pride in your team. And I think that's very important, because it's also quite rare. And there's a lot of agencies around that kind of hire and fire quite quickly. And I'm not criticizing them. It's a different business model. But I just think it's going to just be harder to assure quality. And what strikes me is a completely and utterly non-Amazon analogy that somebody, it was an example in the wonderful book by Vern Harnish, Scaling Up, which I'm banging on about all the time now, because I think it's just a genius book for anyone who's got past a startup stage but is not yet a corporate. There's a good big gap in the sort of literature of good quality management training and entrepreneurship thinking and mental structures, if you like, business models. So Vern Harnish is brilliant, recommended to me by another Amazon agency owner called Ash Monger, who's an Indian chap over in China, who's grown an agency from absolutely nothing to $25 million revenue in 9 years, which I think is quite an achievement. So he's a great person to learn from. So anyway, so this was a restaurant business, which is completely different, you would have thought, to a customer service, for example, for virtual businesses or online businesses. But they realized that one of the biggest, again, they'd worked in the industry themselves, and they saw that the biggest problem in the hospitality industry was turnover of restaurant managers. And you were never going to get an amazing restaurant if you kept losing all the expertise and connections and stuff, and you had to go through all the hassle of hiring and training and everything else. So he came up with a business model, which was quite extraordinary. I think that people who wanted to become a chef and run a restaurant had to pay $25,000 up front, to which was a kind of investment, which sounds like an extraordinary thing to try and sell anyone on, the idea that, hell, you're going to come and go work for me and pay up front. And after, I think, 5 years, they got $100,000 bonus. And then if they stuck at it for 10 years, they got like $500,000 or something. And so they got an insanely strong reason to stick around. But you know what? They had really, it worked. It was a hell of a gamble because people hadn't done it. But they basically massively reduced staff turnover. It's like 80% of their staff stayed for 5 years. 90% stayed for 5 years, 80% stayed for 10. And they ended up with amazingly quality restaurants because they had people who were consistent, had a really strong motivation to make it a great business. And they just, as a result, were a very, very quality business, quality customer cost to experience, and very financially successful. So there's a very interesting strong business incentive, if you can think long enough term, to really reduce staff turnover. And it's not something we're, as entrepreneurs, necessarily geared to. Well, most of us aren't. I think you are. So that's quite the thought-provoking thing in this space, actually. Maybe it takes a German to be that sort of longer-term thinking about staff. So tell me about client side of things. Obviously, the staff hiring and retention has been a great success because of your pride in your people. How about getting clients on board? How have you gone about that from the beginning, and how do you do it now?
So the very beginning, I went to a lot of, you know, events and on blogs and podcasts and everything like that. So podcasts have been my main focus right now, like in general, because I think it's a good source for people who just, you know, go from the office or they have it on the background to learn about certain things. So that was always my focus. And once I sort of explored most of what was out there, I just let the clients come to us, which is working pretty well. Most of them know us for 2-3 years. And I think it's an accomplishment to be here after that amount of time and not be gone, you know, because so many agencies, they just, you know, shoot out of the ground and they stay for a year and then they're gone. And I think the trust has started to sort of flourish, you know, and they just come to us because they know about us for years now. That's how it's happening right now.
Yeah. I guess you've established a reputation or brand, I suppose, if you want to put it more grandly. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that people will quite often, there's the latest thing launched with a lot of razzmatazz. And after a while, I think Amazon sellers get a little bit jaded and go, okay, yeah, it's another thing. Let's see how long it's around for. So there's something about longevity that helps, actually. The other thing is that sometimes it gives you a chance to get those sales, which come, it's like water dripping and a stone effect. Like if you're out there and people hear the name every so often, it just adds another chink of, oh, there's another bit of credibility. Oh, those guys again. Oh, yeah, I keep hearing about those. And it can tell you people who've been in business, say, 15 years in the internet or something, say that some people, they've managed to track it. I don't know how they tracked it, but it's taken somebody 7 years to start working with them. But then they were a customer for another 10. So they were a really valuable customer. It took a while. And I think that's one of those things that we have to, you know, in a world of moving fast, that actually accepting the value of slow, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't try and increase things, but it's good to be patient because being out there for long enough, it, I think, gets you noticed. And I think that's sort of happened a bit with Amazing FBA to a small degree. It's a pretty small audience, but it's quite consistent. And people generally come up to me. If I go to the conference, people generally come up to me, and there's a few people who've listened to it and heard it. And it's been a voice in their ear for 4 years. So I guess that's kind of built a relationship, which is quite interesting how that works. So how do you work when people have come to you then? You obviously got people approaching you now. At the beginning, you were getting your name out with podcasts, etc. How do you work with new clients? And do people have to apply to work with you? Do you take anyone? Mm-hmm. How does that work?
So you go to our website, you know about us, you have like a basic idea of what we do. Then you usually look at our prices and what we offer, and then you can apply to work with us. That basically plays into the whole, like, well, filtering, I guess, for people who would be a good fit. So if you send us an email, like you put in your email address, you get a quote from us. So you have like a broader overview of what we do. You know, I always want to be as clear as possible about costs and everything, so nothing is hidden. Once you accept that this is okay, I can deal with this because we're not negotiating anything. I can manage this, and I want to work with the service. You can set up a call with me, and then we call, and I explain everything to you in detail again, and I answer any questions, and I see if you are a person that would work for our team. Basically, I have this thing in my head that if I would have dinner with you, you know, we can work together. But if I don't feel like we're not on the same wavelength, you know, this is not going to work. But it's more like, I don't want to kick anyone out, but in the long run, we won't work and you will have a problem with us as well. So it's better for me to screen it, you know, in the very beginning. So we're not wasting each other's time.
That's really good. And I think that's the other thing that you're going to get. If you want to get a reputation of working with everyone who's got a pulse and a wallet, as they say, then the trouble with that is that eventually you're going to end up with some quite bad customer relationships or annoying people. And annoying people probably have friends who are annoying, have similar expectations if they want all the service and none of they don't want to pay any money for it. And also, you don't want to get a bad reputation. Then that's the other thing is, I guess it's like selling really cheap products. They're always the worst customers, aren't they, on Amazon? And I guess it's probably similar with agencies. I mean, my experience has been that the people who paid me the most money are normally the people who are the happiest because they're the most engaged. I don't know if you have a similar experience.
Yeah, we do. We definitely do. Like when we have clients who pay, like every time we have the accounting kind of day, it's the first of the month and I'm always there. You know, I've not missed one of the days to do accounting or just have the whole, you know, payment day. I look at what the customer spent the previous month. And if I feel like it's too much, you know, it's like it skyrocketed, then I just reach out to the customer, say, look, what's happening? Like, okay, first I reach out to the girl and be like, dude, what's happened? You know, what's going on? And sometimes it's very easy to go, you know, to figure out the problem. Like there's the product that has an issue or a defect. And otherwise, you know, I think our clients also appreciate that we will reach out and be like, okay, we can fix this. Is it, if it's just like a minor communication issue, we can fix it. So, you know, everything's going back to normal. This is why, you know, our client relationship is pretty good, I would say. And especially with the ones who are spending thousands of euros at our company, they know that they can count on us, that we'll just not rip them off. We will just be like, okay, all right, so this month has been a little bit higher, and let's get to the bottom of this.
It comes down to, again, valuing the longer-term relationship rather than the short-term money, right? And because the relationship's the thing that produces the money. And yeah, that's good. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it's the sort of thing that in theory everyone teaches, but a lot of the time people miss it because they're desperate for money. So let's just to draw this to a conclusion. Very, very interesting to talk about this. And there are more and more Amazon sellers out there who are thinking of running agencies because services are good for cash flow, but they're not so easy to scale. As you talked about, it took quite a while to get the formula right for you. And then things like product-based businesses like Amazon are very, very scalable, but harder to get cash flow from because they're more capital intensive. So it's interesting to have both. And a lot of people that I know are starting to do both. Let's talk about the downsides. What are the big downsides of running an agency, would you say?
The constant struggle if there's a problem, you know, that gets escalated to the top, basically. So, for example, we have the 24-hour, this rhythm that we have to reply, right, this time frame. And sometimes Amazon has issues displaying that, or they switch up the order of which kind of messages are, you know, at the top. So, you know, my girl might miss a 24-hour kind of shift. So in the end, the only real downside, I would say, is that wherever you are, even at the concert, which had happened to me before, and the client calls you, you are in charge. You know, you have to fix this. And it's a 24/7 thing. You don't have time off. Like this is when something goes down, you are the one in charge and responsible. And I think you have to live with this kind of responsibility of also employing that many people. I mean, all of my girls are freelancers. They could leave at any given moment. And they do sometimes, you know, it's how it is. And then you have to, you know, start over again. But also what I would say is another struggle is keeping up with what is happening, what is new, and always being at the top of your game. Because if you lose that like top of your game, you're out of the whole race. And I think that's what a lot of agencies might underestimate, that if you have one client who's super unhappy with what happened and they leave like a bad review on Facebook or whatever, it can come and haunt you as well. And if you then, you know, lose the entire battle of what is happening with Amazon, then you're out.
Yeah, that's true. That's staying on top of the game, particularly with Amazon, is one of those things. But yeah, so, and as you say, if you start for freelancing, they can leave and you have to deal with staff turnover. And again, it comes down to that critical word, turnover, right? If you can minimize that, it's just there are so many upsides to getting that right. But it's minimizing rather than reduced to zero, isn't it? So I guess you just got to be...
Yes. And also, we are all dependent on Amazon. I mean, my agency is just as dependent on it as you guys are, you know, you sellers. And I always... compare Inida to a little speedboat. You know, we're small for a reason. We didn't grow for a reason, even though everybody's always telling me you have to grow, you know, you have to expand, you can make this much bigger, you can go to the US and there are so many sellers. I'm like, okay, look, I wanna keep this kind of speedboat, okay? Because I don't know what's gonna happen. I have a high quality, I have very happy girls, I have happy clients, and I wanna keep it like that. And I think this is like my security kind of point, whereas other agencies just they go all out and they do a lot of marketing and they keep on, like they take on client after client after client. Sometimes they don't even have the workforce to support that kind of, you know, client, like how many people there are who book their services. And that will bite you in the ass. That will happen because at that moment where everything just gets too much, you are the one who will have to apologize. You are the one who will have to work through the weekend and do all of this. And we decided just to stay small for that particular reason. I just want to
make sense.
Yeah, have like a content relationship both ways.
Yeah, that's a very interesting, and again, that's quite a sort of European take on things. That's sort of almost expanding businesses, almost a religious belief in America. And like, I know a couple of agency owners who've done exactly what you say, and they expanded very fast. And I think they've handled it well, the ones I'm thinking of, but still, I would say amongst your clients, they notice and they talk to each other, like the Amazon sellers. I remember somebody saying, he said, yeah, you know, talk to X, Y, and Z person. Said, I would have given it like a 9 out of 10 a couple of years ago. Now it's like, it's good. It's 7 out of 10, but they've expanded rapidly. So they can't quite give you the same level of service. And you've just got to make that decision whether that payoff is worth it for you. Because if you expand, there is a dilution of quality normally. And if you think that the revenue increase is going to make that better, you do it. But equally, it's very valid to keep small. And you know, small is beautiful. That's a Swiss kind of thing, isn't it? It's quality. And as you say, keeping it small means you can adjust very, very quickly. Whereas if you've got a very fixed way of operating and Amazon suddenly pulls the rug from under your feet and you've got, you know, a team of 200 VAs, you've got a hell of a job on your hands to turn that around, right? That could be a nightmare.
Exactly.
So tell me about the upsides, just to wrap up on the positive note. What are the big upsides of running an agency?
I think it's the team itself for me, the team kind of feel, and that you can give, especially like these girls I'm working with, I can give them a job that is fine with them being a mother or being a student or doing something from Thailand to Australia. That's sort of also one of my whys. I always wanted to build something that is working, like playing into the whole independence, location independence kind of concept. And that's always been a major sort of engine for me, to build something that people can live off or have like a small kind of job on the side that empowers them to do something else. And it's empowering myself, it's empowering my team leaders as well as my employees, and ultimately also my clients, who don't have to do work with their customers one-on-one anymore, but they can focus on other things. So I guess my upside is that my why has been pretty much fulfilled from all sides, which is very rare, I think, because usually you get into a business to only earn money. But my way has been going a little bit further than that.
Well, that's a lovely note on which to end it. I think that's quite sort of if we're talking about European and American culture, and it's quite interesting how there are similarities and differences, but I think that's quite an American and aspirational thing, which I think is a wonderful thing as well, that traditionally in Europe, you know, we don't work such long hours as America, but we sort of just come to work to earn and then go back to family life. But you've actually managed to combine earning with something you really believe in. So that's a very positive, great reason for doing it. So thanks so much for letting us know all about the life of running an agency. Very, very interesting insight, not often talked about. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me again. And it's been fun talking about these things, because I usually don't, you know, talk about it at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a bit of a different conversation, as I said, but I think it's good for 6, 7, 8-figure sellers. A lot of the markets are doing an agency, so it could be quite a relevant conversation for them. And anyway, I think it's good to break out of the Amazon echo chamber and talk about business in general, because a lot of the principles are the same anyway. So we need to break out a bit. I think that's my ambition with this podcast. So thank you for helping us break out of the Amazon box. And Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million US dollars or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.